or Dante's View, sorry. And its elevation is 5,500 feet above sea level. So we were standing there on this mountain, and right down below us, we could look down into a place that's called Badwater Basin. And the elevation of Badwater Basin is 282 feet below sea level. And so we had the highs and the lows of altitude, but for me, it was an opportunity just to take some time and experience some rest and relaxation. That was a real high for me. As we look into Acts chapter 14, Paul and Barnabas experienced some real high points in their time of ministry. They also experienced some low points. And as I was reading through this chapter and preparing, some of the lows of life brought me to think of a well-known story about Horatio and Anna Spafford. Maybe you've heard the story of them. Horatio was a well-known lawyer who's lived in Chicago, very successful in the 1870s. He had a practice in Chicago. They were fairly well-to-do, but in 1871, the Great Chicago Fire wiped out a sizable amount of their financial holdings, and that really sent them it set them back. And after a couple of years of trying to recover, they decided that they were going to take a little vacation, maybe a chance like I took, to kind of restore and relax. And Horatio's wife Anna and their four daughters set off on a boat. Horatio had to stay back to do some, take care of some business. As Mrs. Spafford and their daughters traveled across the Atlantic Ocean, in the middle of the Atlantic, their ship was struck by another ship, and in 12 minutes it sank, and only Mrs. Spafford survived. And so we experience the highs and the lows in life. We have these mountaintop experiences, and we have times when we are down in Badwater Basin, and we feel like we're at a low. Paul and Barnabas, as they traveled in Acts chapter 14, we see them travel through some different towns, and they experience highs and lows. And we're going to take a chance just to take a look at how they handled the highs and lows of ministry. And we're going to take a look in Acts chapter 14. I'm going to read the first three verses of that chapter for us here this morning. Acts chapter 14. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went, as usual, into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Gentiles believed. But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to do miraculous signs and wonders. Just a glimpse into the beginning of Paul and Barnabas's journey, their continued journey through that first missionary journey into Iconium. Great success, but also opposition. And so their first stop here in Acts chapter 14 is Iconium, where they have a fruitful ministry, but it's in the face of opposition. There's a real positive thing that's happening, but also some real negatives. When we think about opposition, I often wonder, okay, what's going on? Why am I facing opposition? Why are things not going the way I want them to? Is it because I'm doing something wrong? Or even perhaps even more troubling, it might be my thoughts go to, well, what's God doing? How come things are happening this way? And we might start to doubt God's presence and his power. Paul and Barnabas, however, they don't seem to be deterred by the opposition that they're facing. They carry on. They continue. And they're speaking boldly. In chapter 1 of the book of James, we kind of get a different perspective on what opposition might be. In James chapter 1, it talks about when we encounter trials of many kinds, in opposition to our ministry, opposition to us living out our faith deep and wide, definitely could be a trial. I would consider it that. But James gives us a perspective on what those trials might actually be doing. It says that trials develop perseverance, which actually builds our faith. It strengthens us. I think of it this way. If you've ever had an injury to your arm or your leg, maybe you've broken it and you've had to have it in a cast, and over time you don't use that muscle, and then you get it, your arm or leg out of the cast and it's weak, how do you build it up? Well, you might start with some light weights or maybe some elastic bands, things like that, and you start to use it. And those weights, what do they do? They're a force opposing that muscle that you're using. And over time, that force, that opposing force, builds strength back into our muscles. Trials, opposition, sometimes works in that very same way. It strengthens our faith. It deepens our faith so that we're able to live it out. We're able to take it wide. And so opposition, Paul and Barnabas didn't see that as somehow that they're doing something wrong. It may, in fact, have been, we're doing something right here. We're on the right track. And God is doing things amongst the people of Iconium in spite of the opposition. And it's strengthening them. It's perhaps emboldening them. And so Paul and Barnabas don't see opposition as God not being with them, but in fact, the very opposite, that God is there. Paul and Barnabas give us some key things here, I think, in this experience in Iconium of how to handle opposition. And the first thing that they show us is boldness. It says in verse 3 that they spent a long time there speaking boldly. I like definitions. I like to understand what's going on. And so when I see that they're speaking boldly, I want to understand a little bit more about what boldness is. Because in this day and age, we have a lot of bold talkers. You just have to watch sports or politics, and we see bold talkers. And not to say that that's wrong, but there's a difference between a boldness that's a confidence and a boldness that's an arrogance. And so I looked up what the difference is, and I found a real explanation that helped me understand things. Boldness as arrogance is defined this way. An arrogant person only feels smart if someone else feels stupid. They build themselves up by thinking less of someone else. However, a confident person feels competent from the inside out. They might seek external validation, but they don't depend on it to define their sense of ability or nature. I believe that when Paul and Barnabas went into Iconium and faced opposition and spoke boldly, they weren't speaking out of an arrogance. They weren't there to put people down. They spoke out of a confidence. And we see when Paul writes to the Philippians, he talks about all of his earthly accomplishments, and he says, I consider them rubbish compared to knowing Christ. In 1 Corinthians 3, he talks about that if we're going to boast, we boast in the Lord. And so Paul and Barnabas go into Iconium with a confidence, a bold confidence, that they have a message that they can share with those around them. So as I was preparing for this message this week, I was on vacation down in Death Valley, and one of the things that we were doing there, we were camping, and in our campground there was two gentlemen, one on either side of us, older gentlemen, one we got to know fairly well. What's interesting about Death Valley Park is that it's an internationally renowned dark sky site. And what that means is when you go out there in the middle of the night, We were fortunate to be there when there was very little moon, and you look up in the middle of the night. It's unbelievable. The stars are amazing. And so one night I was sitting out on the picnic table at our campsite, and I was just looking up at the stars. And the neighbor to the one side of us, he says, "Mike, come on over here and bring your chair." So I go over, and we sit down, and he starts talking to me, and he says, "Look up at that star. See that star over there?" And he lines his arm up so I can see it. He says, "That's Canis Majoris. That's the big dog star." And he started to tell me about the stars, and then he started to tell me about lots of other things. He, a very brilliant man, very brilliant. He knew a lot about the stars. He knew a lot about other things, too. Graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary with a Master's of Divinity. But he said, "But I'm a Buddhist now." He shared with me lots of his thoughts on faith, shared with me how he thought Jesus didn't really die on the cross, but swooned and had a chance to go to India and retire and die at an old age. So he wasn't too afraid to share with me some of his thoughts and views on things. Finally, he got around to asking me, "Well, you know, what do you think?" I finally had a chance to talk, and I had not, because I wasn't willing to share, but I didn't have a chance to tell him that I was an ordained Baptist pastor. But in the course of our conversation, as we looked up at these stars, as we looked up at Canis Majoris, the big dog star, and he shared with me his thoughts on the creator of the stars, I just had to look up at those stars and go, you know, my Bible tells me that the God who put those stars in place knows each one of them by name. And how small that makes us feel. But yet, I believe that the God who puts those stars and knows each one of them by name and each one of them by their place, he knows me. And he knows my friend who is sitting on the chair beside me. And even though life doesn't always work out the way we planned, we serve a God who knows us intimately, a powerful God. And so I shared with him my thoughts. I didn't agree with his view, but that wasn't the time to argue. It was just the time to share my faith boldly. But I didn't use it as a time to take him to task. I didn't want to belittle him. I didn't want to argue with him. But I wanted to share with him boldly what I believe. And I think that boldness is what Paul and Barnabas had. A boldness to share the good news of Jesus with a people who, some of them, accepted it and embraced it. Others rejected it and didn't believe. But it's the boldness that I had to practice what I was preaching today, this week, to be bold. Not just to, "Well, whatever, you know, you can believe what you believe." When we share our faith, when we take our faith wide, we can do that with boldness. We can do that knowing that the God who put the stars in place is there with us, and he cares about us. I think the second thing that we see with Paul and Barnabas as they're in Iconium is not only their boldness, but a reliance on God. In the New American Standard Version of Acts chapter 14, in verse 3, it says this: "Therefore they spent a long time there speaking boldly with reliance upon the Lord, who is testifying to the word of his grace, granting that signs and wonders be done by their hands. The New American Standard Version puts with reliance after they're speaking boldly. Now, I'm not very good at the language arts, but that word, that little phrase, with reliance, is it comes out of the Greek word epi, which is used as a, and this is a literary term, an adverbial sense to further describe their boldness. They spoke boldly with reliance on the Lord. Reliance on the Lord takes away the need for me to prove my effectiveness, takes away the need for me to feel like I accomplished something only if my neighbor in the campsite next to me got on his knees and repented. If it's up to me to produce results, that's not relying on God. That's me relying on me. To speak boldly, to share our faith boldly with reliance means that we do so, we speak boldly, we share with people, but we trust God for the results. We trust God that he is going to do what only he can do. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul talks about how he planted the seed and Apollos watered it, but it was God that caused the growth. And that's a reliance on God. That's a reliance on the results of us living our faith wide, of us sharing the good news of Jesus wide, is the results are up to God. He is going to do what he's going to do in the life of people. What does reliance look like for us? Maybe there's someone that you need to have a conversation with. Maybe God's been prompting you to speak boldly about your faith at work or with a friend. When we rely on God, when we share out of a boldness that relies on God, we just leave it up to God to do what he's going to do. My prayer is that my neighbor from camping this week, when he looks up at the stars and he sees Canis Majoris, my hope is that he will think maybe about this crazy, well, he called me a Bible thumper later. And I was like, hey, that's not, like, in my head, I was thinking, that's not fair. You asked me what I thought, and then I get called a Bible thumper. But maybe when he looks up at the stars, he'll remember this crazy Bible thumping Canadian who actually believes that Jesus died and rose again. And I leave those results up to God. And I pray for that man. A third aspect that Paul and Barnabas needed in their ministry in Iconium is that of discernment. We read in Acts 14 that the city was divided, that there were people that were for Paul and Barnabas, there were people that were against them. And there was a tension here, and it was getting dangerous. And Paul and Barnabas needed to use some discernment, some wisdom. And I think they needed to use what the well-known poet Kenneth Rogers says, you got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. You got to know when to walk away and know when to run. Paul and Barnabas needed to know when it was time to fold them and to move on. We recognize that not everyone agrees with the gospel message. And Jesus himself says in Matthew chapter 10 that the message about Christ is going to bring division. It's going to set people against one another when somebody says, I believe in Jesus, that he is the Son of God, and that he died for my sins. And other people will say, no, I don't believe that. And they may call us Bible thumpers. And I figure, well, if that's the worst that I get called, I'm doing okay. But the good news of Jesus can be a controversial topic. Paul in Romans talks about it, if it is all at all possible, live at peace with all people. And so we recognize we need discernment, we need wisdom to know when we're sharing our faith, when we reach out and we speak boldly, relying on God for the results, there comes a time when we need to use discernment about where we need to maybe just let what we've shared linger. Maybe just move on and let God do what he's going to do with what we've offered. Paul and Barnabas used wisdom and discernment. My wife, Terry, she found a good reminder of what kind of encapsulates this point. It's a little plaque she found. It's in our house. And it says, knowledge is knowing what to say. Wisdom is knowing when to say it. And Paul and Barnabas needed that wisdom and discernment. And we know for us that, again, if we go back to James chapter 1, it says if we lack wisdom, we can ask God and he will give it. And so when we come into those situations, I mean, I was on vacation this week and I wasn't, you know, prepared to share my faith per se. But when God gave an opportunity, I used it. And I pray that God would have given me wisdom to share. But Paul and Barnabas knew that it was time to pull up stakes and move on. And so they traveled down the road to the town of Lystra. And when we talk about highs and lows, they have some amazing highs and lows again in Lystra. When we talk these days, we talk about trending. You open up your phone and you see what's trending. Paul and Barnabas, when they got to Lystra, they were trending. Okay? They did this amazing thing with a lame man. They brought healing to him. They spoke and God healed this lame man. And they were trending so much that they actually were going to be worshipped. They had brought the wreaths and the bulls and they were going to bow down and worship them as gods. So they're definitely trending on the upward. We use trends these days. I mean, even as I traveled this last week, we, you know, where's a good place to eat? Well, let's check, see what people are saying is a good place to eat in this place. We use it all the time. Paul and Barnabas, when they were in Lystra, and they were trending to the positive, it wasn't that people were on their smartphones, but they were definitely listening to what other people were saying about them. And I don't know about you, but if somebody said, hey, he's a god, let's worship him, there might be a slight temptation to run with it. Like, hey, what can we take advantage of this with? But Paul and Barnabas, in the face of this, they resorted back to truth. They shared the truth of who they were. They shared the truth of who God is. And instead of milking it for their own advantage, they spoke the truth. And they actually leveraged their popularity. They leveraged that trend for people to actually listen to them. We read in Acts 14, their usual process was to go into a town and go into the synagogue and to share the good news with people who already believed in God. Here in Lystra, they had an opportunity to go into the public square. And so we see in there that they actually take the opportunity to use their popularity to share, and they start right from square one. And they talk about a God who created the world. And they have an opportunity to share the gospel message with people who may not believe in any God at all, or definitely not the God who we worship. So they leveraged their popularity, not for their own advantage, but to point back to God, to point back to the truth. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Paul and Barnabas point back to the truth. They point back to Jesus. Well, their experience in Lystra also shows how fickle we can be as people. Because as soon as they figured out that, hey, these guys aren't gods and they're not going to bring all kinds of comfort and we can't use them for our own benefit, they definitely were trending the other way. Their trend definitely went on the negative. And it's amazing how one day you're being worshipped as gods, the next day Paul and Barnabas experienced the exact opposite of that, to the point where Paul was stoned and pulled out of the city and left for dead. I mean, that mirrors the experience of Christ at the triumphal entry on Palm Sunday. He comes in to praises, and only a few days later is crucified on the cross. It shows how fickle we can be as people and how we're driven by trends and we're all about the next best thing or next greatest thing that will help us. Paul and Barnabas speak truth, a truth that's constant. God is constant. He is not changing. And we read this in Numbers chapter 23 where it says this: God is not human that he should lie, not a human being that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? Again, we can go back to James chapter 1 where it says, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. Trends, they can change just like shifting shadows. People, we can be fickle, just like changing trends. Paul and Barnabas experienced the highs and the lows of sharing their faith, of enjoying the favor of people and then enjoying or not enjoying the wrath of people. And yet they know the truth is constant. Jesus Christ is constant. So knowing that their time in Lystra obviously had come to an end by Paul being stoned and thrown out of the city, God in his miraculous power restores Paul, and they're able to continue on, and so they move on in their journey to the town of Derbe. And here again, they experience a real fruitful time, and God blesses their ministry. Many people come to know the Lord. We don't know how long they stayed there in Derbe, but then they decided it's time to return, to head back home to Antioch. And so what do? Well, you might question the wisdom of Paul and Barnabas here, but they go back to the towns that they just had left under such dire circumstances. They go back and they revisit the places that they left on the run. But they go back for a very different purpose. They go back to strengthen these new believers, these new churches. They go back to strengthen them, to build them up. And how do they do that? Well, they focus on what I think is three different things. The first one is encouragement. Paul and Barnabas go back to encourage the new believers. And who of us hasn't been lifted by a word of encouragement? Who of us hasn't needed that, even just a nod or a look to say, I'm with you, or you're doing good, you're hang in there. Don't give up. Encouragement is so important. It's so vital. In Hebrews chapter 10, it says, let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, all the more as you see the day approaching. For us, one of the most important ministries we can have to one another is the ministry of encouragement. Barnabas, by his very name, was an encourager. That's what his name means. And so the ministry of encouragement for us as believers is so important. It's such a vital part of what we do for one another. The second thing that Paul and Barnabas do is they go back through the churches is a ministry called exhortation. And we don't use that word very often these days. But exhortation is like preparing people for what they might face. Paul here talks about that we must face hardships. That's one of the things that he exhorts these churches with. And it's giving people an opportunity. Now, they have seen the hardships that Paul and Barnabas have experienced. They've seen Paul get stoned. They've seen them have to leave town on the run for the sake of or for fear of their lives. So they know that hardship is part of the Christian life. I mean, if we consider being called a Bible thumper a hardship, okay. But we recognize that not always are people going to love us by nature of who we follow. And it's a good idea for us to know that in advance. In John 16:33, it says, and these are Jesus' words, he says, in this world you will have trouble. And we know that. And sometimes we need to just remember that. In this world we will have trouble. But then Jesus doesn't leave it there. But he says, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. In this world we will have trouble. But take heart, for I have overcome the world. People will call you names. People will disagree with you. People will ignore you or shun you or mock you. But take heart. Be bold. Take the message of Jesus wide still. Because Christ has overcome the world. Exhortation. The last thing they do is they organize the church. They set up structures. They put leaders in place. And that's one of the beautiful things of being part of the local church. We have a local church to encourage one another, to build one another up. We have a local church so that we can come together and we can be encouraged. We can be challenged. We can band together. So beautiful, the body of Christ, when it comes together and it's functioning and it's living out its faith deep, but it's also taking the faith that we have and going wide and telling other people about it and inviting people to join the family of God. The church is awesome. And it's so good to be part of a church. And so Paul and Barnabas, as they go strengthening those churches, they encourage them, they exhort them, they organize them so that they will have a lasting influence in their world. As we conclude, we all experience highs and lows. We have the high mountaintop experiences where we are just on top of the world, where we're resting, where we're being renewed. And we also sometimes walk the low points of our life. We walk through the valleys where we feel like we're at the bottom. Paul and Barnabas did that. And yet they carried on. In the face of opposition, amidst a fickle reception, with all the challenges that they faced, they didn't shrink back. And we have that same call that Christ put on our lives to go into the world and share the gospel, to make disciples. We have the same call that Paul and Barnabas did, to go and to be bold, to rely on him. We're called to speak the truth, to leverage opportunities when we have favor, to share the good news of Jesus, to understand the challenging realities that we face as Christians, to encourage one another, to exhort one another, to be real with one another, to be part of a church and to enjoy what that brings for us. I'm reminded of Horatio Spafford's words as he traveled over to meet his wife in Europe. The captain of the ship called him up to the bridge as they passed over the point where his wife's and daughter's ship had sunk. He wrote these words that are a very familiar hymn to us. He wrote the words, "When peace like a river attends my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul." And so when we go through the highs and lows, when we experience the joys of success, and when we go through the valleys and we experience the agonies of failure and of sorrow and of loss, we know that the constant truth is that God is with us and that He loves us and that it can be well with our souls. And so my encouragement to you today is that we know the truth of God's presence with us. We know that we can speak boldly and we can endure whatever comes, but we faithfully rely on God to meet us in those times. I want to encourage you, be bold. Rely on God to take your faithful service to Him and to use it as He sees fit. Be discerning. Know when you need to come and when you need to go. Speak the truth and trust that God is with you always. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for your word and we thank you for the experience of Paul and Barnabas as they traveled through these towns, as they experienced the highs and the lows, but they remained constant to you.